Hey everybody, welcome back to Boozy Bracketology, where we believe in three things: strong drinks, wrong opinions, and crowning champions. Did I fuck that up? I told myself not to mess that up, but I'm still a little salty about some of the decisions that have already been made in this 80s movie mega bracket that we've got going on here. But that's okay. I have every bit of faith that our panel tonight is not going to mess this up. My name is Mike. I will be your host. And tonight is Thriller Night. We are diving into the 80s thrillers to determine what, and there, yep, everybody do the dance. It's an audio medium, but that's okay. Our listeners can picture it anyway. It's fine. We've got 16 movies going up against each other, and I have seen all of four of them. So fortunately, the panel that I have sitting here in front of me, at least on my computer screen here in front of me, has much more experience in these particular movies, and they're going to be offering their opinions. Let's meet them right now, find out how they're doing and what they are drinking, starting off in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, with Brandon. How are you doing, and what are you drinking?
Honey, I'm doing great, man. Yeah, I was really excited to be on this bracket, this one right here. Some classic thrillers. And since the last recording when I did the horror, my wife and I did find out we are having a baby boy. So that was pretty exciting.
Excellent.
And yeah, life's been good. Work's been good. Tonight, I am drinking. I've drank this before in Boozy Bracketology. My Hattori Hanzo drink. It's bourbon, cranberry grape juice, ginger beer, and lemon juice. Lime juice. Yeah. Very good. Very, very fucking refreshing. Cheers, guys.
Excellent. Well, if we ever do a 2000s mega bracket, Kill Bill will most likely be making an appearance.
Yes.
Next up, another familiar voice for all of these panelists will be familiar to folks have been following us on this journey. But next up, just a little bit further north up in Connecticut, we've got Scott Brill with us tonight. Scott, how are you doing? And what are you drinking?
Well, I'm doing great. Fantastic. Unlike Brandon, I'm as we know, I'm a teetotaler, so I'm going with my famous Pepsi Cola. But I do have a sound. Let's see if it works. Not bad. And again, tapping the top so it doesn't explode all over me.
Exactly.
But yeah, I'm doing great here in Connecticut.
Excellent. All right, and next up, definitely a familiar voice to all listeners of Boozy Bracketology, for better or worse. Mostly better. I'm going to throw him that bone. He's actually tolerable sometimes. I don't know. Chris, how you doing tonight? What you drinking?
Well, 4 years ago, I asked you over to my house to start a podcast, and here I am 4 years later getting verbally abused.
So. Chris, I hate to break it to you, but it was almost 6 years ago.
Has it been that long?
It has.
Oh, my God. Mike, I'm doing well. It's been a rough couple weeks at work, but I'm settling in the new normal. And you know me, I am nothing but up to standard, up to date with the most current fashion trends and trendy drinks. So I grabbed one of these from the Spetzel Brewery out of New Braunfels, Texas, or Spetzel. I don't even know.
It's probably Shiner, right?
It is Shiner. This is the Shiner Holiday Cheer. Cons, because I am clearing out the beer fridge. And so I've got two of these left. I have got one bottle of the Pumpkin. And then I have two of the Kona Mai Tais, which are just going to stay here until someone else drinks them, because I'm never touching them again.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good night, though. Let's have some fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember when you busted out that Mai Tai for the first time, and you were not a fan.
No, this is delightful as hell, though. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, no, I've had that beer. That's a really good beer, actually. And now, westward ho, all the way to Las Vegas, Nevada. We've got Christy Spees here with us again tonight. Christy, how are you doing? And what are you drinking?
I'm doing great. Tonight, I'm drinking Six Cents. It's a Shiraz by the, Michael Davis Winery.
I'm getting the cork pop and everything. She was ready.
Cheers.
And rounding out our panel for this evening, we've got Nathan Dye back here with us. Nathan, how are you doing? What are you drinking?
I'm doing all right. Finally enjoying some nicer springtime weather in central Illinois. I'm getting to go out and remember how much yard work I have to do. But
tell me about it.
It's finally nice out, which is a good thing as a whole. So what you're hearing is the sound of a fresh Diet Coke. It's always my go-to. So.
Love it.
Very nice. Very nice. My turn. Tonight I grabbed this for three reasons. Number one, it is thematically completely opposite of what we're going to be discussing in this bracket. Number two, it's very thematically appropriate for what my daughters are currently obsessed with. And number three, it is, 12.5% alcohol by volume? 12.8% alcohol by volume. So... so just in case, as I said, I haven't seen very many of these movies, but still, just in case you guys do mess this up, I will be prepared. This is called The Unicorn Vomit. I'm killing the four pack here with this one. I've been featuring it this is Boozy Bractology here on Pub Trivia Experience, recently. It's a triple India pale ale brewed with watermelon. It's very refreshing and, very enjoyable. And so I'm just going to say cheers, and let's get this party started. Your first matchup for tonight in our 80s thriller mini bracket is going to be the number one seed of Body Heat versus the number 16 seed of The Hitcher. Brandon, take us away.
Okay. So when I was looking over this bracket, it really made me realize 80s thrillers, there were a shit ton of erotic, like dirty... crazy thrillers. And this side of the bracket is the erotic thriller side. The other side, horror, like catch a serial killer side. So, Body Heat. I don't really remember much of it. I didn't rewatch it. I know it does have a big following. Kathleen Turner, I'm pretty sure. A good twist at the end. Turns out she's a villain the whole time. And, not a bad film. The Hitcher, I feel, it does have more of that horror side to it. And I think it does have a following for some people. I've seen it. I'm not a big fan. It does probably have one of the greatest kills in horror film history, or just film history. Jennifer Jason Leigh, bye-bye, ripped apart. Yeah, off screen, messed up scene. But I gotta go. Probably the better film all around, 80s remembered, Body Heat.
All right, Body Heat picking up its first vote. Some of these definitely have a lot of horror elements to them. Next up, we're gonna go to Scott.
It's interesting. I was talking to my husband before this because, of course, I was asked to do this today. And he used to work at Arena Stage in Washington, D.C. back in the 80s. And Body Heat had just come out in 1981. And Kathleen Turner, who was relatively not that well known, was doing a Midsummer Night's Dream at Arena Stage where he was working. And he saw her like every day when this movie hit. You know, like the first weekend, there were like 20 people in the audience. you couldn't get into the theater after the movie opened. So she really became a big star. The movie had a huge impact. It really made a big star to William Hurt as well. It was a very big thing. And Mickey Rourke, when he was, didn't look like he does now. He was quite a dreamboat at the time. And it's based on the movie Double Indemnity, the 1940s film. That was its own thriller in the 1940s about people who team up to kind of murder a husband to get the insurance and all that. The Hitcher, I think they made a sequel of it and everything. Exciting, thrilling. But no, Body Heat is certainly a classic, and I can't go against it. And certainly Kathleen Turner, you can't go against her. She was really, you know, you have to remember, she was really quite something at the time. It was like a revelation of an actress at the time. So Body Heat.
And Body Heat picks up its second vote, as I learned that it is based on Double Indemnity, which is actually a movie that I have seen on Like Body Heat. So
loosely based. It's not directly based, but loosely based. Yeah.
Inspired, we'll say.
Yes, sure.
But yeah, I'll definitely need to add that to the list. Especially if it continues the way it's been going so far. It hasn't lost a vote yet. Chris, you're up.
So I was walking around a local Comic-Con not too long ago called Spookala, which, by the way, was chased out of Ocala, Florida, and relocated to Tampa, Florida, because they were accused of being satanic. It's literally a horror movie Comic-Con.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
Okay. Apparently the 80s are alive and well in Ocala.
Everything comes back around. Yep.
Oh, dear.
But while I was there, one of the guys I got talking to was a guy that was there selling vintage movie posters, like first-run movie posters. And I got talking to him. We're talking about a movie, and I'm like, oh, I love this movie. I'm like, this is one of the movies that really got me into the horror movies, in the genre. Like, I just think it's so well done. And he goes, oh. And he started talking. He tells me the price. He's like, it's like $60. I'm like, yeah. Like, it's not a bad price. I'm trying to save money. By the time he found out how big of a fan I was, he knocked that price in half, and I walked away with a new movie poster. And it's sitting right there.
Hey.
That is a
I respect that. I like that a lot.
That is a first-run movie poster from The Hitcher.
Wow.
I love this movie because it's tense when it needs to be tense. It's unique. It's not like every other horror thriller movie from the 80s. It does shy away from the grotesque violence in the most important part, which is insane because it leaves that Jennifer Jason Leigh scene all to the imagination. And in my head, it was disgusting. It's a taut, tight thriller. It's got elements of horror. It's a genuinely scary film. And I had never seen Body Heat, so I sat down to watch Body Heat about 2 weeks ago. And my God, that's a good movie. It's so unique. And I was trying to think of, okay, is there my generation's version of Body Heat? And I think it's Wild Things. I think Wild Things is our generation of Body Heat because it's hypersexualized. It's all about deceit and deception. There's a twist ending. With that being said, that movie has been in my life for a lot longer, and that ending I will never shake. I am getting uneasy thinking about it, and you don't see a damn thing. Hitcher gets my vote.
And The Hitcher prevents the sweep at least, and maybe we'll be able to pick up two more votes. We'll find out, but it's going on a little bit of a run. Let's check in with Christy.
So I remember watching The Hitcher as a child, and that scene, yes, where he tears that girl in two. Like, I couldn't look as a kid, and now I'm glad that I know that I still couldn't look as an adult, and I'm great to hear that I didn't have to look because they didn't even show it. So both times I was saved from that. And I don't know what rock I lived under to miss Body Heat. Maybe it was the fact that I was born in 79. So it came out when I was 2. But it was a really great movie. I almost brought my wind chimes in so we could listen to the wind chimes tinkle together. Like, it is amazing how ahead Kathleen Turner's character is ahead of everybody in this story. It's like you don't even realize it until like the cards just start falling one after the other at the end. But The Hitcher will always haunt my nightmares. I mean, he kill shotted a helicopter with a handgun. So yeah, I'm going Hitcher.
Ooh. And the 16th seed of The Hitcher does pull even with Body Heat. It's going to be a photo finish. Before we hand it off to Nathan, though, I know it's early, but does anybody want to throw up their buzzer beater for the round and try and take a final 30-second pitch to sway Nathan one way or another?
I don't know him well enough to know which emotional strings to pull at.
Kathleen Turner was very sexy and hot, and I'm a gay man.
Oh, my God.
That's all I got to tell you. Even I thought she was hot.
Oh. Oh.
In here, seeing as how I wasn't born yet for any of these movies when they came out. That said,
I feel really old now. I probably remember what I was doing the day that you were born. That's how frightening that is when you talk like that.
Is this not Kathleen Turner's first movie?
I don't know if it was her first, but it was pretty darn close.
And my introduction to Kathleen Turner was her voice as Jessica Rabbit.
Sure.
Which left a strong impression in my young mind. So in terms of star-studdedness and cultural impact, I would have to give it to Body Heat, seeing as how Body Heat is a movie that I'm aware of, and Hitcher was a movie that I had not heard of. So that would be my takeaway.
It is fitting that Kathleen Turner has one movie going past the first round. God knows her other one will not.
It is another, I think, better, perhaps, erotic thriller later on. But we'll see.
And Nathan, you're right. It was her first movie.
Oh, Scott, you were doing the same thing I was doing.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. Yeah.
Followed by the Steve Martin vehicle, The Man with Two Brains. Oh, that's hilarious. Anyway.
Where is that on this bracket, Mike?
Right? somewhere in the rejects for comedy part three, maybe? I don't know. But anyway, Body Heat is going to be moving on, but The Hitcher did put up a hell of a fight for a 16 seed. This next matchup, being an 8 and a 9, I have a sneaking suspicion maybe just as close. We're about to find out. It's between the number 8 seed of Body Double and the number 9 seed of Frantic. And we're starting this one off with Scott.
Sure. For people who know me, I'm a big theater guy, and Frantic has always been a movie that I loved for several reasons. One, Harrison Ford is actually very good in it. It's set in France. His wife disappears. And if you've seen the movie, his wife is played by Broadway legend Betty Buckley, who I've met many times. She's a lovely person. She's just an amazing, talented singer, but also just a lovely person to have met and actually experienced and be in the same room with. And so that's kind of to my heart. But not only that factor, but the movie, it holds up very well as a thriller. It really, really does. It's one of those just great 80 thrillers movies. It's really great. That being said, Body Double is also very good. I mean, it's a really good mystery in Body Double, and Melanie Griffith is no slouch. I have to say, she's really great in it. But just because it's something I could probably go back and watch again and really enjoy, and just Paris is a background. I mean, Paris is like a character in Frantic, so, and it's really stunning. So I go with Frantic.
Frantic picks up its first vote. Chris.
Listen, God. I'm struggling with something here, and it's
I can tell.
We could all tell. You hit it well, but we could tell.
One of these movies is undoubtedly better, but it's helmed by a piece of shit. Body Double is not De Palma's best work. It is a wonderful vehicle for Melanie Griffith, but it's not his best work. It is hyper violent for the time, although that has been passed 13 times over in the preceding decades. But Frantic is by far the better movie. Harrison Ford is phenomenal in it. I forget who plays Michelle, but the
Emmanuel Singer.
That's it. Yes,
very good.
Yeah,
is amazing in it. It's a taut thriller. It legitimately is a thriller. You're trying to unravel this mystery. And when you get to the end of it, you kind of figure out that it's all about politics, and they don't care that civilians are caught in the middle. And the final scene where he's walking, him and his wife are walking away, and he's carrying Michelle's dead body is freaking haunting. Frantic gets my vote, but Scott, 100% right. Paris itself is 100% a character.
Absolutely.
And it's beautiful, it's wonderful, and it's got a tragic ending. So Frantic gets my vote.
Frantic picks up its second vote, and it, when Chris said it, one was directed by a piece of shit, I knew who had directed Body Double. I did not know who had directed Frantic. I looked it up, and I did not know that, but it was absolutely who I guessed, and the less said about that, the better. We'll move on to Christy.
All right, so I had seen neither of these movies up until a week ago, and I'm just going to hate to disagree with our panel so far, but I just could care less about Frantic. I'm just thinking of Harrison Ford and Get Off My Plane and The One-Armed Man Killed My Wife, and now it's Where's My Wife? And thinking of Harrison Ford and his wife issues, it just wasn't my favorite of his wife issues. Body Double, high level of mystery and suspense going on. And they threw in some humor in there as well, even though, you know, making fun of somebody's claustrophobia might be, you know, maybe not the best way to do it. But I thought it was a comedic part of this movie. So I'm just going to go Body Double. Stop talking before people hate me more.
Once again, we have a little bit of a matchup on our hands after a 2-0 lead. Body Double is going to pick up its first vote. Let's see if it can pull even or whether Nathan's going to put it away. You're up.
Well, I am going to put it away. As a person who travels a lot for work, it really speaks to me the difficulty of dealing with foreign agencies in another country that don't really seem to care about what it is you're trying to accomplish. Not only that, but I think Harrison Ford in more of a drama role, really, you know, a lot of his action movies, you don't get to see the same kind of range that he can really give. And so I think, for that reason, Frantic is the movie I think I enjoyed, more between the two. And, you know, Body Double is a not a bad movie by any means, but I don't think it left me maybe kind of thinking about the ending in the same way that Frantic did. I love the character of Michelle and her kind of just trying to get by this whole movie until at the end when she decides to help him. But so that's the way that I would go with that one.
And Frantic does pick up its third vote and will be moving on. I got to check in with Brandon. Your thoughts. Do we get it right?
So neither of the movies are really anywhere close to my like favorite 80s films or 80s thrillers, better way to put it. But I do like things about each that are very random and interesting. So Body Double, I love those types of mysteries where the individual becomes their own little detective. So it was like Rear Window, then Body Double, and then later in the early mid-2000s, Disturbia. Someone's looking out their window. They see a murder happen. They're like, I'm going to try to solve it. Really interesting premise. Not a bad movie. And Melanie Griffith, she did a good job. Now, Frantic, I didn't think it was a bad movie. But one thing that I do like, and I don't think no one brought it up, I'm a Blockbuster kid. I grew up in the big Blockbuster era. And when you go to Blockbuster, sometimes you just want to look at the VHS, look at the DVD cover. Frantic has a great, great, it could be art piece. That film cover is amazing. So Frantic, it's already moving on.
Frantic is already moving on, but it does pick up its fourth vote. My knowledge of Frantic consists of the line in the Bare Naked Ladies song One Week about like Harrison Ford. I'm getting frantic. So, but based on these recommendations, I'm going to have to check it out. But let's find out if, like Snickers, we are guaranteed to satisfy with this next matchup. It's going to be... Now, was that a stretch of a segue? Yes, it probably was. Anyway, like I said, 12.8% alcohol by volume. It's good beer. This next matchup is going to be a 12-5 matchup, and I've actually seen one of these. The number 5 seed is Dead Calm, and the number 12 seed is Fatal Attraction. So, Chris, I want to know, what are your thoughts here?
I think if we're looking at the movies that made the overall mega bracket and we're talking about Kathleen Turner and Michael Douglas's best movie, it's not, neither one of them are in the thriller section. It's going to be Romancing the Stone, which will undoubtedly lose in the first round of the adventure section. But
that bracket's brutal, though.
Yeah, that bracket's going to kill me. But, oh, Lord, I just did not care for one of these movies, and the other one I flip in love. I think Dead Calm is an underrated, tense masterpiece of a film. Not only did it give us my first look at Nicole Kidman, holy crap, I fell in love with her the moment I saw her in that movie. She is gorgeous in it. But it strands her. It's a positive female centric role, because no one's coming to save her. Her husband is blips and blips away, and so she uses every weapon at her disposal, literally every weapon at her disposal, to survive, to get back to her husband. I have critiques about it, and for fear that we're not going to get to this movie's not going to move on, I'm going to go over the critique right now. The critique is that the opening scene and the smoking gun, the jump off point from the beginning of the movie, is their kid dying. That did not need to be there. That wasn't necessary to the plot at all. There could have been a million different reasons they were out on that boat, and it didn't play into anything happening. There was no tension between the characters over it. You could tell they were just two parents trying to get over something. They could have been anything. Also, the most fake looking car crash, a victim flying out of a windshield, that I've ever seen in my entire life. That was a mannequin doll that did not move. Okay. That being said, Dead Calm is tense. It is clever. It is unique. She doesn't fall for the tropes. The only thing she doesn't do is she should have killed him when she had the chance the first time. She tied him up. That was a mistake. But it's wonderful. And then when you find out what happened on the other boat, when Sam Neill's finding what happened on the other boat, it's insane. With that being said, Dead Calm gets my vote.
And that is one vote for Dead Calm. And even though I have never seen Dead Calm based on Chris's illusion, I just want to say that I feel like Nicole Kidman could tie me up anytime. In the meantime, we're going to move on to Christy to see what she thinks about this matchup. Dead Calm or Fatal Attraction?
Well, I think that Fatal Attraction should be required watching for any man thinking of cheating on their wife or girlfriend. I watched both of these movies as a kid, and I will say, as an adult, Fatal Attraction just hits a little bit harder than Dead Calm is, because being trapped out on the water is kind of my nightmare scenario. So I'm not going near that boat. Fatal Attraction for me.
And Fatal Attraction pulls even with Dead Calm. Nathan, you're up.
Ah, man, Fatal Attraction. Let's just say that I know what Michael Douglas is going through in that movie. And there are so many moments, maybe not to that extent.
Has a rabbit been killed?
That's what I was like, do you have two rabbits?
Yes, I too had my bunny boiled. In
oh, dear.
No, it wasn't like that. But like, let's say that everyone has experienced red flags in a relationship. And there are so many moments in that movie where I'm screaming red flag at him and he's just not seeing it. But I kind of love the movie for that, because it just, you know, yes, he's cheating on his wife, but it's a great way of making at least the male audience a little more sympathetic to him. Dead Calm, I love a good, you know, lost at sea sort of story. It's been a while. It's been a minute since I've seen that one, but Sam Neill, Nicole Kidman. I love Sam Neill and everything he's in.
Man, Billy Zane, that was a really, that was, I want to go back and rewatch that one. That whole movie is tense, but I think in terms of just the enjoyment I get out of watching it, Fatal Attraction is probably my one that I'll go back to an additional time. It's the one that I want to sit down and show someone for the first time, I think.
And Fatal Attraction has now pulled ahead of Dead Calm with 2-1. Do we have a 12-5 upset on our hands? It is a bracket, so those do tend to happen. Brandon, what are your thoughts?
So this was the movie I was trying to get thrown off the bracket. But it's okay. It's okay. So, Dead Calm, I was talking to my father-in-law about it. He loves the film. He loves the film too, Chris. He does. It's okay at parts. And Nathan and I agree. Sam Neill, great actor. I like Sam Neill a lot. Nicole Kidman, I either love her in movies. Days of Thunder, great. Vanilla Sky, I think she was Vanilla Sky. Eyes Wide Shut, no. Vanilla Sky was Cameron Diaz. Yep, Eyes Wide Shut, no. Something about Nicole Kidman and Sharon Stone, they loved to sleep with people in films. In the 80s and the 90s, they were doing it a lot. That sex scene is so fucking uncomfortable. Okay, she's trying to do it to save her husband, but I wrote an article the other day written by somebody, like a long article, about how uncomfortable that sex scene is. She seems like she's enjoying it. And it's just a little awkward. Now, Billy Zane, I've never, ever, ever liked that guy. He seems like a prick. Back to the Future, prick. Titanic, prick. Dead Calm, prick. If we were doing an ultimate thriller bracket of the best thrillers ever, Fatal Attraction would be on that bracket. Dead Calm, I don't think would be. Fatal Attraction is my pick.
The opinions of Brandon regarding one Billy Zane do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Boozy Bracketology podcast.
Oh, no.
It's funny because every time everybody mentions Billy Zane, I see your point, but my brain always goes to Zoolander. You should listen to your buddy Billy Zane. Don't ask me why. Probably just because of the sheer randomness of the cameo. Anyway, that's an entirely different discussion because right now, we do have a winner of this particular matchup, and it is Fatal Attraction. The 12-5 upset has occurred. Chris is giving the thumbs down. Once again, I remind him it is an audio medium, and so I'm going to hand it off to Scott, who will actually speak audioly. It's not a word, whatever.
You hope I do.
Yeah, hopefully so, but I'd like to know. What do you think?
I was kind of hoping this would come down to a split, because I like both of these movies for different reasons. You have to realize, and again, I'm going to play the old man card here, Fatal Attraction was a cultural phenomenon when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
There were articles written about it. It was crazy. Of all people, I saw it with my boss at the time, my woman boss that I worked in a law firm. And I was so uncomfortable the whole time. I just was so uncomfortable. But I have to say, Glenn Close is one of my favorite actresses. She could read the telephone book and I'd be thrilled. I mean, she's just, I think she's a phenomenal actress. And anybody else, they really did not want her. They wanted anybody else like but her. They just, she thought she was the wrong type, the whole thing. But she went and nailed the audition and she was just who she is. And by the way, as a little piece of trivia, she still owns the knife from the movie. And she hangs it prominently in her home. And so the guests know that they're not going to stay for very long. It's not a real knife. It was made out of wood and cardboard and, you know, whatever fake thing that the prop department made, but she still has the knife. But again, it was truly a cultural phenomenon. You just mentioned the boiled rabbit and everybody knew exactly what you're talking about. They reshot the ending because it was going to end a different way. And then they ended with the wife doing what she does. So there was, you know, so Ann Archer had something to do. So it's quite a movie. The child, you all forget that the child in the movie was a really unknown actor and was really phenomenal throughout the whole movie, really held that grounded center of the movie. That all being said, I absolutely also love, like Chris says, I love Dead Calm. I think it's a very taut, very wonderfully written thriller, and I'm a sucker for the sea, so I think it's phenomenal. These three people, yeah, you may think Billy Zane's a prick, but let me just tell you, someone who was having like a gay awakening at the time, he could be in that Speedo for the rest of my life, and I'm good. I'm fine. The sex with her, you thought it was awkward? It was amazing. Yes, she wasn't. That's the whole point of the movie. Was she enjoying it or was she not? That's the whole point. You don't know. That's the thriller part of a mystery, that is she really enjoying? Because if you were having sex with Billy Zane, even if it was under duress, it can't be all that horrible. Just can't be. So that's me. So, but anyway. And I, of course, I love Sam Neill. I absolutely love, I mean, I am a Jurassic Park fanatic. I absolutely love him in that movie. I believe Spielberg picked him for Jurassic Park because of his performance in this movie. He had seen this movie. And Nicole Kidman really was a discovery in this. She had done other things before this, but really only like in Australia, like nobody really knew who it was. And this was, I believe, an Australian film. Right? I'm pretty sure. And so it was really pushed, and Sam Neill's also Australian, so it really pushed the brink for these actors in a different way. So they're both really phenomenal. I'm sorry to belabor it. I know it's already won, but I will, only because it was such a cultural phenomenon. But I think I'll give Dead Calm another vote, just because if I went back to watch one of them, as much as I love Glenn Close, I think I would go back and watch Dead Calm again, because it's really such a wonderful thriller.
And Dead Calm does pick up its second vote, but as Scott said, Fatal Attraction had already won, and we'll be moving on into the Elite Eight to face off against the next two movies, neither of which I have seen, but one of which I have a rather interesting personal connection to. At the gym I used to go to in Palm Harbor, Florida, a guy that worked there always used to call me Christine because he said I looked like the guy in the film Christine.
And you're married to that man to this day. It's very exciting. That's very thrilling for you.
Now that I have planted that completely random seed, the number 4 seed is actually going to be the stepfather. And as I said, the number 13 seed is going to be Christine. And we are starting this one off with Christy.
All right. I cared so much about Christine that I accidentally watched Carrie instead of it. I was just like, look back at the bracket, and I was just like, oh no, it was supposed to be Christine. But that's how much I cared about Christine. I mean, it's a movie about a guy and his killer car versus The Stepfather, which was, if you grew up in the 80s, a fear for every child whose parents got divorced that you would end up with a crazy psycho as your step parent, coming down into the basement and just going completely off the handles. Was it a great movie? No, but it's getting my vote, The Stepfather.
And that is one vote for The Stepfather. Let's check in with Nathan.
I do. Christine is fun. I think of Stephen King's killer vehicle works, I prefer Maximum Overdrive, but Christine is still a fun movie. But I Terry O'Quinn plays such a good weirdo, and The Stepfather is just, man, I just watched it today. This is the one that I needed to get this one in because I hadn't seen it before, and I pulled it up on my phone at work and I played it in the background and I watched it and man, that last scene on the stairs was, I wasn't sure how it was going to go. And I loved the tension there, and I loved following, Terry's character as he, you know, is being pursued by the cops. And then finally he catches him and he just kills him right away. And it's like, that plot goes nowhere. It's such a good moment. And so, you know, shout out to Christine. I think Stephen King has better 80s movies. So, but I'd have to go with Stepfather.
The stepfather picks up its second vote. Check in with Brandon.
I was really thinking, you know what? I'm going to go Christine for sure. You guys bring up some good points about Stepfather. It's not a bad film. It's paced pretty well. And it, Christy, hit it on the nail. Parents get divorced and you might be stuck with stepfather or a crazy stepmother. Yeah, it's scary. Especially you see that film in the 80s, you're like, oh shit, I hope this doesn't happen to me. I didn't like that later on. I think it became a trilogy, or maybe it was just two films. I would have liked if the guy was just killed right away at the end, and then that was it. No more stepfather. But I think they continued on maybe for three films, and then they did a remake in like 2009, I believe. Christine, I think what hurts it, it gets mixed up with all the other Stephen King films, especially in the 80s, The Shining and Firestarter, Maximum Overdrive, Pet Sematary. It gets mixed up with a lot of that. But you know what? I enjoy the Christine. I do like the characters. It's interesting to see how the guy, the main character, does start changing because of the car. I want to give a little love. It's a beautiful car too. I want to give a little bit of love to Christine.
And Christine gets a little bit of love and picks up its first vote. Will, I almost said she, will it get a whole lot of love? Let's check in with Scott.
I think a little love is all Christine really wanted.
Yeah, yeah, it's right. Yeah. And the guy owner, he was ignored. So, I'm a big Stephen King fan. So, but I agree that this is probably certainly not the best movie made of a Stephen King, work. So, but that being said, when I was asked to do the bracket today, there's exactly one movie on the list I have never seen. And I told Chris, I had never even heard of it. And that is The Stepfather. I'm sorry. I just completely missed this movie. I was busy graduating from Gettysburg College. I guess I had no idea what was going on. I had no idea. But I loved Terry O'Quinn, certainly loved him on Lost and love his other work. He's really quite an actor. He really is amazing. So I have to see it. But so by default, I mean, I do enjoy Christine. I've seen it several times and really like it. And I also identified with, you know, the lead character's put upon. He's kind of bullied. He's, you know, neglected and all that kind of stuff. And so that kind of resonate with me. Plus just, I think even something that's not the best Stephen King is still a pretty good thing to watch. So I go with Christine.
And Christine does pull even with The Stepfather. We're going to hand it off to Chris to decide this in a minute. Like before we get to the buzzer beaters, I just want to observe, like Scott, I had also never heard of The Stepfather. So I punched into IMDb. And the first thing that comes up is actually the remake that was done in 2009. And the funny thing about that is it stars Penn Badgley, but again, 12.8% alcohol by volume might have something to do with this, but I read it as Penn Jillette. Oops. And I was really confused for a second.
I would have watched the hell out of it.
I would have watched Penn Jillette.
Right? Right? Okay. That is just a random side note that I thought everybody would find amusing. Does anybody want to throw up a buzzer beater to sway Chris one way or another? I'm not going to count Scott's comments on Kathleen Turner in the first round against him. Everybody's still got their buzzer beaters available if you want to do it. And I'm hearing silence. So, Chris, it is all up to you.
So stop me if you heard that before, but I am passionate about one of these movies. The Stepfather is one of the dumbest, most boring pieces of trash I have ever seen. It is nonsensical. Absolutely nonsensical. And I'm going to detail just a couple of problems I have with it, because I went back and watched it because I was worried that my opinion from college was tainted and I didn't want to bring that into the bracket. I had a distaste for this movie in college. I went back and rewatched it last week. Here are my notes.
Uh-oh.
First off, this is just a couple of them. These are all from the second half of the movie. I didn't think I'd take notes till about halfway through. The first half, I was busy taking a nap. First off, So we all know that Terry O'Quinn played John Locke in the TV show Lost. There's another character in the TV show Lost played by, I think his name is John Davies.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy Davies.
Jeremy Davies. Plays a character named Daniel Faraday. They all, obviously, we know where they get their naming from there. The backup psychologist that the daughter is supposed to go see in this movie is named Faraday. That's the nicest thing I can say about this movie, is it's tangentially tied to Lost in one little moment. Okay.
So there is notes, people.
There is a scene where his old brother-in-law from the East Coast drives up to a house and is there, and then a cop pulls in behind him. And he's having a conversation at the house. He sees a cop pulls in behind him. He gets in his car, aggressively slams in reverse, and zips around the cop to drive away. The cop does nothing. Does nothing. He went into this lady's front yard and then peeled out. The cop did nothing. Didn't even get out of the car. Didn't go in reverse. He said, oh, that's a normal thing to do. Let's let him go on his way. Okay. So many problems. The biggest problem I have is with the end of the movie. This is the biggest problem that I have. So Nathan is 100% right. I'm way over my time, and I know that, Mike. I'm sorry. But Nathan's is 100% right. The best part of the movie is actually the end, where this whole side story of the ex-brother-in-law trying to track him down only for him to be killed rather quickly is hilarious. The end of the movie, though, after that, the end of the movie is the mother at the bottom of the staircase brandishing the brother-in-law's gun as Terry O'Quinn's character is going up the stairs to get the daughter. She shoots him twice. She fires the gun three times. She shoots him twice. Then, as Terry O'Quinn is moving up the stairs, she lowers the gun and yells for her daughter to grab the knife. Bitch, you have a gun! Now, it just so happens the gun was empty. We didn't know that. She didn't know that because the gun only fired three times in the movie, which means this idiot brother-in-law showed up to a house with a gun with three bullets. Great job, dude. It is nonsensical. You literally stood at the bottom. You could have taken three steps up the stairs and gotten a good shot, but no, you stood at the bottom of the stairs shooting and then yelled for her to get the knife. There's a lot of other things you could have done. Stupid, stupid, stupid. Christine gets my vote.
And that was a vote for Christine, which will take the victory. Three
so
votes
stupid.
to two. I had this in my back pocket, so I'll just go ahead and say it, because after the 2-0 lead that Stepfather had, I was ready to say, fear not, Christine fans. There are other Stephen King films and other Richard Bachman films on this bracket on the other side of it. But as it turns out, we've already got Stephen King representation heading into the Elite Eight, so we're good there. But speaking of that other side of the bracket, let's get into it. We've got the number 2 seed of War Games going up against the number 15 seed of Extremities. I have heard of one of these movies. Nathan, take it away.
Man, the geeky computery high school kid in me just loves War Games. I gotta say, like, it's a little bit corny rewatching it now at times, but I love kind of this really specific era that it brings, of, you know, hacking the payphone and using, you know, dial tones to unlock locks. It's a really specific, really small window of time that it really captures. And to take that and be like, well, what if you're hacking and meddling with things that you can't really understand and are beyond your power? What if you accidentally almost blow up the whole world? Like, it's such a, like, goofy, like, this is why they warn you not to mess around in the computer lab in high school kind of thing. And you know, Matthew Broderick, I think, I don't know that this was his first movie. This might have been his first lead.
War Games is close.
It's close.
Yeah, it is close. But Matthew Broderick and Ali Sheedy, they had a really good chemistry in that movie that – no, it's a very kind of light movie until the end, when suddenly kind of the seriousness of it all comes in, and you really start to wonder, like, oh, there's actual stakes here. And, you know, as a kid, when I saw this movie, it really kind of that stuck with me, and I enjoyed it a lot. And Extremities, you know, Farrah Fawcett is great, but it just doesn't, it didn't stick with me in the same way that War Games did. So I have to give it to that one. Also, it's just a classic. So.
And War Games, the number 2 seed, picks up its first vote. We're back at the top with Brandon.
Yeah, this one, it's simple. War Games, it, Nathan hit it on the head. You said everything. I will say there's those movies as you get older, you used to watch them all the time, maybe 2-3 times a year, but then it becomes one time a year. And then eventually, maybe once every few years, you don't care anymore. I'm starting to get there with War Games. Matthew Broderick, I will say, one thing I can't stand in that movie, he whines a lot in that movie. Once he starts going, he does tend to whine. Ally Sheedy, I love Ally Sheedy. She's adorable in that film. I love her. Extremities, so I will take back when I tried to get other films on this bracket besides Dead Calm. It probably should have been Extremities or one other film down the road we're going to talk about to take those out. Extremities, it's, yeah, Farrah Fawcett, but it's a tough watch. It's a tough subject. She goes through, yeah, almost a very brutal rape, and then the guy tries to, he finds her. She does get payback, but it's sad that no one believes her. And Farrah Fawcett, she tries to act the best she can in the film. It just, it's still just too weird and tough to watch. But definitely War Games. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. War Games picks up its second vote, has Extremities on the ropes. Scott.
Yeah, both are very interesting movies. I kind of agree with the panel. I remember watching War Games when it was in the movie theater, and I just watched it about, oh, maybe a month ago when it was on Showtime or HBO again. And I thought, okay, I'll watch for a minute. I sat and watched the whole thing all over again. I was just riveted right back all over again. There's, you know, it's funny. So I remember the time I have a cousin who was a little bit older than me, and he back in the day in our house in Massachusetts, and he put a phone into a cradle, and that phone made a noise and talked to the computer at the University of Massachusetts. Now, this is in 1981 or two. And I was like, what the, and then we were able to play a game on the television, like from the, it was like, what is happening right now? So I was there at the beginning, just like this. And so, yes, as computer technology obviously grown, but you have to realize back then that was like unbelievable. And, you know, I think what's lovely is that for most people, that concept that you could dial into the NORAD computer, no question. Okay, I guess you can. I guess we don't really understand computers, so I guess you can. It makes sense to me. It's one of those logical things in a movie. So, that being said, so again, I'm a theater guy. Extremities was based on a play. It was an off-Broadway play by William Mastroianni, who is a wonderful playwright. And it for 10 cents. Does anybody know who originated the part? And yes, go ahead.
Susan Sarandon,
that's absolutely right. And then Farrah Fawcett took the part over, and really it was the first time there was a revelation about Farrah Fawcett that she wasn't just some dumb blonde, that she really could act, she really had some acting chops to her if she had the right vehicle and the right thing. And so they asked her to do the movie. Now, I have to, only because I don't think it's going to go on, I must tell my Farrah Fawcett story. So, okay, I was a gay kid growing up in the 70s, but what did I have next to my bed? The iconic Farrah Fawcett poster in the bathing suit. I mean, Charlie's Angels was it, man. Farrah Fawcett, man, when she left the show, devastated. I couldn't move on. I was like really freaked out. I was like, what? How am I not going to see her every week? What is happening right now? So you fast forward to years later, She was on Broadway in the early 2000s, obviously before she passed away, in a play called Bobby Bolin, which was about an ex-cheerleader who had now grown old. And my husband and I, we said, oh my God, we need to meet Farrah Fawcett. And she was signing autographs outside the theater. But we said to each other, the only way that the autograph would mean anything is or be worth anything is if she just signs Farrah or Farrah Fawcett. In other words, if it's a two Scott or two Kevin, like that, no one's going to buy that. They're going to buy a thing that just says Farrah Fawcett and everything. She comes out of the stage door. Now, she was tiny. You'd be surprised. She was maybe 5'2", is as tall as she ever was, which is shocking to think, you know, how thinking about tall as she was. She walked up to me with that lovely countenance. She still looked gorgeous, and with that sweet little Texas voice that she had, she said, "What's your name?" And I just said, "Farrah Scott," and she wrote "to Scott." I said, "I am not selling this. I don't care. This is mine forever. I still have it in my bedroom." You meet your heroes, man, and it's really, it comes true. Anyway, that's my Farrah Fawcett story. So Kevin, who's more stoic about things than I am, Kevin, he just whispered out his name too. And so we had autographs, didn't mean anything. All that being said, I absolutely love War Games. I really do. And Ally Sheedy, you're right, is phenomenal. Just a great movie. Holds up very well. War Games.
And War Games does pick up a third vote, but I love that story, Scott. I genuinely like Farrah Fawcett. My wife is very, very short too. She's about 5'2", so I'll have to tell her that she's the same height as Farrah Fawcett. Yeah, she'll get a kick out of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, if War Games does pick up its third vote, and so far this is our first, potentially our first true runaway of the evening. Will it be a sweep? It has the possibility. Chris, you're up.
Oh no, War Games. Let's move on.
Yeah, absolutely.
The master of brevity, Polonius, would be proud. Christy, wow. Will it be a sweep?
Thanks for that Shakespearean reference. That was awesome.
Sorry, I have no idea where that was really good. Anyway.
All I have to say is grow the fuck up. War Games belongs in the 80s. And it needs to stay there. There was nothing suspenseful or thrilling about this movie for me. Like, maybe when I was 8, it was thrilling for me. But now, no. I rewatched it. I'm like, this is like the boringest movie. I'm so sick of watching movies about teenagers. And then I watched Extremities, which I've never seen before. And it is the definition of suspense for me. The entire movie just set all of my nerves on end. Like, it was hard to watch. It was hard to sit through. And the fact that the guy at the end with her two roommates just gaslights her the whole way, trying to get them on her side to get him released. Just, I mean, it is just so deep how much this character cuts into Farrah Fawcett's character. And the fact that you guys chose War Games, I'm just going to let it go. But it's not a sweep because it's Extremities. It's thrilling. It's suspenseful. And it can come out of the 80s. People should watch it today. Yeah, I'm going to show my daughter this at some point and be like, this is the shit that can happen to you. I'm like, don't let people gaslight you and say that you're the crazy one. Stick to your guns. Maybe, you know, don't dig a grave between the tomatoes and the flower bed. But yeah. Okay. Moving on.
Sweeps. We don't need no stinking sweeps. Extremities does pick up a vote. But with apologies to Christy, War Games will be moving on into the Elite Eight. And it will be facing off against one of the following two movies. It's either going to be the 10 seed of The Lost Boys or the 7 seed Dead of Winter. And we are starting this one off with Brandon.
I got my Lost Boys t-shirt on. Oh, I am ready to go for this. But I will start. In the dead of winter, there was a film I had never seen before named The Dead of Winter. My wife and I, I can't wait to be a father. So The Dead of Winter, Alex and I had never seen it, and we decided to watch it together. And I was incredibly surprised by The Dead of Winter. Oh my God. I'm trying to remember her name.
Mary Steenburgen?
The actress. Yes, Mary.
Her winner, Mary Steenburgen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. She did a phenomenal job.
Mary Steenburgen.
She played herself. She played the actress that she was playing as, and she played the sister. It was a fun movie. I was surprised. Yeah, the acting was so-so at times, but the predicament she's put in, she should have seen the red flags, as we brought up earlier, red flags. But she was a struggling actress. She wanted a job. And you wake up after being knocked out by drugs and your finger is gone? Oh, my God. Oh, yeah, Mike. Just got to watch the film. The twist at the end, I liked it. I liked how everything played out. I liked the husband and the brother. They brought a little bit of humor, even though they're very small parts. I like that. Now, I'll be very quick. The fucking Lost Boys. If you really think about it, that's an 80s movie. I mean, it might not make this final 16, but it's an 80s classic. Some people might think it's a horror, but as the film, how it paces, it really is a thriller. And Kiefer Sutherland is practically playing a same character in Stand By Me, just as a vampire. He crushes it. Corey Haim, Corey Feldman, Diane West. Oh my God, I always forget her name. The girl who is a vampire, but if she's changed, she's not a vampire. She's incredible. We'll talk more about Lost Boys. Please, guys, do not get this wrong. Please do not. Lost Boys for me.
And that is one vote for Lost Boys. Scott, what are your thoughts here?
Dead of Winter is simply the greatest film that was ever made in the history of cinema. No, that's ridiculous. Fran, I just wanted you to...
Holy shit!
I wanted you to flip out.
I enjoyed it.
I said that just as he was drinking, ladies and gentlemen, so I wanted to do a spit take.
I like it. Yeah. I like
it. No. Dead of Winter is fun because I love Roddy McDowall, so I just want to say shout out to Roddy McDowall. He's adorable in the whole movie, and he gets stabbed in the neck. I mean, what more can you ask for? But no, Brandon's absolutely right. The Lost Boys was another, like Fatal Attraction, it was a cultural phenomenon when it came out. It was big. You know, you have to realize there's all this, we talk about vampires and all this now. That really wasn't that kind of died out. You know, there really wasn't a young hip movie about vampires or whatever. There had been Dracula, which was done in 1979, which made Dracula kind of sexy again and all that kind of stuff. But that was Frank Langella. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't the same thing to have, Kiefer Sullivan running around and flying through the air. You know, it was like really kind of cool. Plus, Corey Haim and Corey Feldman became great friends during this. And then, of course, we know what happened with all that. But it was well cast, well directed. And it is slightly more of a horror movie than a thriller movie. But I Brandon's right. I mean, there's thriller elements to it. It's a great. And it's also a movie you can easily rewatch. Whereas I don't think anybody's ever decided to rewatch Dead of Winter on purpose. So my vote is for Dead of Winter. No, it's for no ridiculous. Brandon, I hope you were drinking that time. No, my vote is for Lost Boys.
And the Lost Boys picks up its second vote. Chris, you are next.
So there's a 1980 movie that's not on the bracket by the name of Melvin Howard.
Oh, yeah.
That is the movie for which Mary Steenburgen won her Academy Award.
That's right.
Mike, that movie, do you know who made that? Who directed that?
I do not.
Jonathan Demme.
Oh, Jonathan Demme. Yeah.
No sure, kidding.
Yeah.
The great director of Sonic.
Demme. Can we get to the it's bottom? Demme. It is Demme. Jonathan Demme is how they pronounce their
name. Oh, okay. I actually always said Dem too. So I
always said Demme. For some reason, I assumed you were
just Jonathan Demme, just like that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is already more interesting than the entire movie Dead of Winter. This is long.
This conversation. So you're also picking Dead of Winter? Very good for you. Okay, so that's two for Dead of Winter.
I was like, does he have more to say, or is that just is that his way of casting his vote?
Lost Boys.
All right, we've got another 3-0 vote. Maybe a sweep. I don't know. Will Christy play spoiler again? We're gonna find out.
Oh no, it's definitely Lost Boys. I mean, I watched Dead of Winter, and it was a great movie, and I'm sad I missed it as a kid, because this would have been right up my alley. Like, this woman gets into a car with somebody who has no credentials, drives upstate, and gets free goldfish. And then the goldfish are literally the only thing that save her. Like, if she hadn't found those goldfish, then her husband would never have found her without the damn goldfish. So, it's going Lost Boys, guys.
This is the first time we've agreed in like two brackets.
Yeah, it has been a while. Yeah,
we can meet somewhere.
They can meet somewhere, and apparently that somewhere is teenage vampires, I guess.
Yeah, but the good teenage vampires, not
the non-sparkly kind.
It's
fair
way
enough.
Better than War Games. This one can come out of the '80s.
Nathan, do we have a sweep?
I gotta be honest. The movie that I pick has to be the one with all the damn vampires. It is Lost Boys. This feels a little unfair because I haven't actually seen Dead of Winter. There's no way it's going to beat Lost Boys for me. Lost Boys is my go-to vampire movie. When we did the horror round, I asked, where's Lost Boys? It got its due. It's in thriller. That's okay. It is a thriller, but it's so... Man... It's sexy teen vampires done proper. And I could go back and rewatch it over and over again. So it's Lost Boys.
And it is Lost Boys, as we have recorded the first sweep of the night, with apologies to Dead of Winter and Mary Steenburgen. Fear not, Mary, you will always be Clara Clayton in my heart.
Clayton Dravine.
Wow.
No. That's now Eastwood Ravine, sir. Eastwood Ravine.
Boy, deep dive on Mary Steenburgen, man. Wow, deep cut.
It's just literally the first movie I remember seeing her in. Obviously, I've seen her in many, many more.
She's a great actress.
She is
a wonderful, wonderful actress. All right, we are down to our final two matchups of the night. And the first one is an anomaly in this bracket for me personally, because it is two films that I have actually seen. And I have opinions on which one should move on. But I am the host. My opinions don't matter. You know whose opinions do matter? Scott's. Take us away. Is it going to be the number 3 seed of Manhunter or the number 14 seed of Running Man? I have flavor text, but I have a feeling you'll cover it. So take it away.
Running Man is simply the greatest film ever. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's here, and he's going to speak now. I like Manhunter better than my own movie. I can't even watch Running Man again. I have to watch Manhunter. That was not bad, actually. For those of you who don't know, Manhunter is kind of would have been completely forgotten about had it not been for a little movie that won every Academy Award in 1992.
Speaking of Jonathan Demme, right?
Speaking of Jonathan Demme, The Silence of the Lambs. This is based by the same author, and William Peterson, before CSI, played I believe he's the FBI agent in it. Mm-hmm. He's not Clarice, yep. he's an FBI agent. And one of the greatest actors. I'm just telling you, if you don't know who this person is, find out. His name is Brian Cox, and he's a British actor from Scotland, actually. That's where he's originally from. But he's in a whole bunch of movies. He was in Succession. He was the father in Succession. But he is, what a career. He plays Hannibal Lecter in this film. So, and he's, and he, and it's, you know, it's different than what was done in Silence of the Lambs, but Brian Cox is a wonderful actor. And this movie is when you, if you just, you kind of forget Silence of the Lambs, watching it on its own, it's a pretty scary movie. It's, it really holds up pretty well. You know, so I think Manhunter is very fascinating, and I vote for Manhunter. And so does Arnold.
Manhunter picks up its first vote. Chris, you're up next.
See, this one's tough because I don't know if I'm in the minority or not, but I genuinely like The Running Man. I think it is perfectly a fun, entertaining film to watch. Arnold chews scenery better than anyone, and there's a lot of scenery to chew in The Running Man. My God. But I am the dragon, before me you tremble. This is Manhunter.
Manhunter picks up its second vote. Christy.
I'm going to continue the sweep on to Manhunter. I mean, it is Red Dragon. So if you ever saw Red Dragon, this is that story. I'm like, yep, watching this. I'm like, I know it's going to happen. How do I know it's going to happen? And then I was like, oh, it's Red Dragon. That's why I know it's going to happen. So yeah, Manhunter.
And Manhunter picks up its third vote. And we'll be moving on into the Elite Eight. I will express my opinions on that momentarily. But first, I want to hear from the rest of our panel, starting with Nathan.
First of all, in terms of if we're approaching this from a what is the better movie, which I know is how we're supposed to technically be doing this, it is absolutely Manhunter. You know, Hannibal Lecter, one of the greatest villains in all of cinema history. It's been a minute since I've seen it, but I was surprised at how I'd seen Silence of the Lambs first. And my impression going in was, you know, this is the inferior Hannibal Lecter movie, which turns out it surprised me at how engaging it was. Running Man was, I liked it. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that it's set in the future of 2017, I think.
Yep.
That I got a kick out of. And I, for a movie that's supposed to be kind of an action, you know, sort of dystopian movie, I was surprised at, there were some moments that are maybe surprisingly prescient in our modern day, in how things get twisted and how entertainment is used to manipulate the masses. All that said, that's going to be Manhunter for me. But Running Man gets some love.
And Manhunter does pick up its fourth vote, but with a little bit of love thrown to Running Man. Brandon, do we have a sweep?
So, out of all the films on this thriller bracket, I don't think it's going to win, but I think Final Four for sure, national title, whatever, possibly. Manhunter is the most beautifully filmed film of all these films. The best shots, I believe the best cinematography, and out of all these films. I first saw it, I got Criterion about 2.5 years ago, and it was on Criterion, and I popped it up. And I believe most people, if you ask them a trivia question, what was the first film that Hannibal Lecter popped up? I believe most people would not even know what the hell this film is. Listeners, please, please, please give Manhunter a shot if you've never seen it. It is a beautiful, amazing, eerie, creepy, fucking wonderful film. Manhunter. Running Man. Oh my God. Manhunter. Great movie. Keep on moving.
And Manhunter pulls off the sweep. Thank you all for getting this one right. I have nothing against Running Man. I do think it is a very entertaining film. And as Nathan said, it does have a degree of prescience, especially in the way that it depicts the how entertainment would potentially progress, Popular Entertainment. But I was very fortunate to see Manhunter shortly before the film Hannibal came out. My college roommates was an even bigger cinephile than I am, and had somehow come across that movie. And he said, we should watch this other, the very first take, as it were, on Hannibal Lecter, cinematic take on Hannibal Lecter. And it is everything that everybody said. Wonderful film. I'm super happy it's moving on. I'm just so proud of you guys.
Why aren't they on this bracket? One of your other college roommates has been here.
First of all, that's actually not true. But second of all, that is a fantastic question, and we might need to look into that as we move forward. But for right now, we're going to move on into the final matchup of the night. Unfortunately, I retired the joke, so I can't make the Hitchcock Kubrick thing against Chris. So we're just going to move on to the number six seed of The Shining, which barely eked into the 80s. Going up against the number 11 seed of Phenomena. We are starting this one off with, as I said, Chris.
So this is where you're usually hearing me laugh and giving my 1-2 word answer, and we're moving right along. However, Phenomena shouldn't be on the bracket. It's not an American film. It breaks that rule. Phenomena, I don't think I could have an 80s movie bracket without an Argento film being on here. And it's not the one I would have chosen. If you remember the U.S. release, it was called Creepers. The movie's actually called Phenomena, Jennifer Connelly. And it is the most batshit crazy of all the plots of all these movies. It's the most batshit crazy. It is about a girl that can talk to bugs that helps find a serial killer. It's Dario Argento, who is one of the masters of horror films. The giallo horror film is the giallo genre of horror films is insane. It's bonkers, but it is so well executed. And this is kind of it's more on the thriller side of it. It's not the name the other Argento films, but it's not those. Watching Argento work is just so interesting because his films are freaking beautiful. Jennifer Connelly is really good in this. If you haven't seen it, see it. But oh, The Shining.
I was waiting for it. The Shining picks up its first vote. We'll hand it off to Christy.
I don't use the term masterpiece lightly when I say this is The Shining. I mean, it is a classic, iconic movie. Even my kids know what it was. And when they finally asked me to watch a horror movie, this is the one that they foolishly chose. And then they instantly regretted. Yeah, I know. I'm like, I don't think you guys understand. And they're like, no, we want to watch this because The Simpsons references it nonstop. So I will torture you no further with my axe through your bathroom door. It is Shining for me.
And The Shining picks up its second vote. Nathan, what say you?
Chris reflected my thoughts on Phenomena pretty accurately. Man, it is a weird one. It's a weird, weird movie. And I agree, Jennifer Connelly, I think she was like a teenager in that movie. She
is like so 16, 17.
And she's great. And I believe, was that Loomis from Halloween? Is that who the...
Yep. Yeah. Donald Pleasance.
100%.
Yes. I don't really have a whole lot else to say about that one. It's just it's a weird one. Obviously, The Shining. Jack Nicholson shines in everything he's in. But when I watched The Shining, Shelley Duvall is what always stands out to me. And kind of knowing the backstory on some of the filming of that maybe darkens the tone a little bit. But, credit to her, I think she is the standout of the movie, personally. And I will say, I don't know if everyone here has seen it, Dr. Sleep. Pretty good sequel. Came out a couple years ago. I get it. But, obviously The Shining.
And The Shining picks up its third vote. And we'll be moving into the next round. We want to hear from everybody, though, and we're going to start that off with Brandon.
So if Fatal Attraction was over here and War Games was over there, right here, we'd be seeing the Final Four right here, but not even to the Final Four yet, because that is what the Final Four should be.
Yeah.
So Phenomena, Alex and I, one night, we decided to watch it. I think it was on Shudder. We might have found it on there. Jennifer Connelly, she did great. A girl that is telekinetic with insects. Yeah. What I did like about the film, Scott, I meant to bring up this film and also The Dead of Winter. They both, how you're in the theater, they have a very theater type flow to them. And I do like that. And Phenomena, I thought about it. I was talking to Alex about it, my wife and I. It really, it's not as good as this another Argento film. Oh, Opera. Deep Red. Suspiria. This film gave me very Suspiria type vibes. I believe she was at a girl's trade school in Sweden or something, and they all start dying. She has a fun serial killer. Not a great movie, like a midnight movie. It was okay. But The Shining, it's an instant fucking classic. But I have more to say the matchup coming up. I'm leaving it at that for now for next round.
The Shining picks up its fourth vote. Scott, do we have a sweep here?
Well, I'm writing a book, and the Shining was on, and all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. All work and no play. Red rum. Red rum. Red rum.
I see seven flashbacks.
Oh, sorry. The movie possessed me there for a second. I'm back. Are we still on? What's the other movie? Phenomena, or what are you calling it?
Yeah, the John Travolta vehicle in the mid 90s where he has.
Oh, my God, Mike.
That's what we're doing? Okay. Okay. Vote up for Chariots of Fire here. And from another poll that never got us to do, man. I love The Shining, even though Stephen King didn't necessarily love The Shining as much as we all do. Although he's backtracked a little bit over the years on it, and The Shining is just brilliant.
I can't figure out, why are we talking about a Stephen Weber film?
Yeah, that's right. Why are we talking about a Stephen Weber film?
Exactly.
Although that, you know, that it wasn't that, that wasn't that bad actually.
All right, well. The Shining does complete the sweep I'm waiting for our panelists to slowly realize that they have set up, I think Brandon kind of alluded to this, but they have set up a matchup between The Shining and Manhunter in the next round.
Dear.
Good luck with that one. I am happy that I am the host I am going to declare this particular episode to be over. Some fantastic opinions, some hot takes. We've got ourselves a mostly solid Elite Eight. Definitely some of the arrangements led to some interesting matchups up ahead. Quick recap, for the next round, the number one seed of Body Heat is going to be taking on the number nine seed of Frantic. Number 12 seed Fatal Attraction pulled off the upset in the 12-5 matchup. It is actually going to be the favorite, I suppose, seed-based-wise going into the next round, as the number 13 seed of Christine also pulled off the upset over Stepfather. On the other side of the bracket, we've got the number 2 seed of War Games going up against the number 10 seed of The Lost Boys. That should be an interesting matchup. And as I said, the number 3 seed of Manhunter going up against the 6th seed of The Shining, Michael Mann versus Stanley Kubrick. Whew. Pair of heavyweights going up against that one. that will be all for us here at Boozy Bracketology. Hey, if you enjoy the content that we bring you here and would like to support the podcast, patreon.com/PTEBB is your home for that. You get a lot of bonus content for us and all of these shows in our ever-expanding PTE network. All the other information about the socials and everything like that can be found at PTE Podcasts. That's plural, podcast with an S. .com. I'm sure these links will all be in the show notes as well, but we're going to sign off for now for the Boozy Bracketology podcast. I have been your host, Mike.
Brandon.
I've been and still will be tomorrow, Scott.
I'll try to stay Chris.
I'm Christy.
I am Nathan.
Hope everyone has a good one. We will see you next time.
Designated hosts, just in case that hits him really hard. If I'm midway through the thrillers,
if everyone goes a little bit too hard, I don't know.
Yeah, you guys, if the rest of us pass out drunk, you guys just finish it for us.
Just keep talking.
Keep on going.
Live and just comment the whole time.
You know, it wouldn't be the first time we had to call on a pinch hitter. So Nathan, if we lose one, just tell your wife she's on call.
That I have been a pinch hitter in the past.
I was going to say, Nathan was our first ringer, as I recall was the term, yeah. Katie was like, I'm just going to go get my husband. Okay, sweet.
Hey, do you want to talk about snacks? Okay.
Gosh, that was a great time. All right, but we're going to dive into these matchups. And yes, if I do happen to pass out, that's why I put the order in the chat. You guys can just keep running on.